Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thank you for joining us this evening for the launch of Gerard Henderson's new book, Cardinal Pell, The Media Pylon, and Collective Guilt. I'm Michael Casey, the director of the PM Glynn Institute here at ACU, and the Institute is delighted to be hosting our friends from the Sydney Institute on campus for the launch of this important book. We have many distinguished guests with us tonight, including figures from politics. I note in particular the presence of Senator Erica Betts, from figures from the media, the law, arts and letters, education and business. And we also have with us many, many supporters of the Sydney Institute and of the PM Glynn Institute. We're also honoured to have with us tonight our Vice-Chancellor, Professor Zlatko Skirbas, who'll say a few words of welcome in a moment. But before I ask the Vice-Chancellor to do that, I'd like to acknowledge country and offer the university prayer. In recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spiritual and cultural connection to country, and in continuing ACU's commitment to reconciliation, it's customary to acknowledge country as we pass through. Today, we acknowledge and pay our respects to the First Peoples, the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waterways. We thank them for their continued custodianship. We acknowledge and celebrate the continuation of a living culture that has a unique role in this region. We acknowledge elders past and present and thank them for their wisdom and guidance as we walk in their footsteps. And the University Prayer. God of all truth and goodness, bless us as we gather here at Australian Catholic University. May we be strengthened in mind and heart to pursue what you inspire with insight and deliberation, that our world may advance in true wisdom and justice for all, through Christ our Lord. Amen. Vice-Chancellor.
Thank you so much, Michael. What a pleasure to be here today. It is so tempting to acknowledge so many of you, but the list would be long. It's still early in the evening, and I think we've got better things to discuss. But can I just say, one and all, thank you so very much for being here today. I'm absolutely delighted to be able to welcome you at Australian Catholic University. But I would like to single out three individuals. Mrs. Margaret Canine, who's going to be launching the book. Mr. Gerard Henderson, of course, the author, and his wife, Mrs. Anne Henderson, both recipients of the honorary doctorate at from ACU. Delighted to be here. So welcome to this occasion. It is an important and significant occasion. Gerard approached me a few weeks ago and asked me to consider hosting this launch event here at ACU. In this context, I would like to make three observations. Of course, the answer was yes, and resounding yes. ACU is a continuing supporter of the Sydney Institute, and the Institute, of course, is a non-for-profit current affairs forum encouraging debate and discussion. Now, ACU is always proud to support pluralist views and discussions. Secondly, as you would have noticed walking onto this floor, Cardinal Pell has had a long-standing connection with this institution. It is therefore right that we provide a launch site for the book, which is a gripping story about the charges being brought against him and ultimately the High Court anonymously upholding the appeal and quashing the original conviction. This was the drama that, as Honourable John Howard put it in the preface, gripped the attention of many, and many of us are here today. Thirdly, in this book, Gerard brings to life an epic court case and the context that enveloped it. It is a story about the media and justice, but also a story about a man caught up unjustly in the turbulence of our times. Can I just say what a privilege it is to be hosting this event here tonight? Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor. It's my pleasant duty now to introduce Miss Margaret Kinnean. Margaret Kinnean is one of the state's most distinguished barristers. She commenced her career in the law as a law clerk in the New South Wales Attorney General's Ministerial Office in 1977 and was called to the bar in 1982. She joined the Office of Public Prosecutions in 1986, serving as a Crown Prosecutor from 1990 and as a Deputy Senior Crown Prosecutor from 2002. She's appeared in hundreds of criminal trials and appeals over 30 years, securing convictions against some notorious offenders in cases involving some horrendous crimes. She was appointed senior counsel in 2007, and from 2012 to 14, she was the commissioner of the New South Wales Special Commission of Inquiry into the investigation of child sexual abuse allegations in the Catholic Diocese of Maitland, Newcastle. After a long career as a fearless Crown Prosecutor, she continues to practice at the bar as a fearless defence barrister. It's customary in Who's Who in Australia to list one's recreations. Some of us perhaps, if we happen to be listed in Who's Who at all, might mention gentle pastimes like watching the sea or drinking alone, but Margaret's lists her recreations as a fourth Dan black belt taekwondo and boxing. In an interview in 2019, when asked what advice she might offer to young women entering the law, she said, "Be brave and bold." Advice she has clearly followed herself in her own outstanding career. All of which makes her the perfect person to launch Gerard Henderson's book, Cardinal Pell, The Media Pylon and Collective Guilt. Please welcome Miss Margaret Kinnean.
Thank you, Dr. Casey, Vice Chancellor, Senator Abetz, and sundry heroes of my life. It is an extraordinary honour to have been invited by Dr. Henderson to launch his magnificent book on the abhorrent offensive which was sustained against His Eminence Cardinal Pell. Perhaps Gerard invited me because I too, like His Eminence, was pursued and pilloried by McClellan's agenda-driven Royal Commission. Perhaps it is because I have spoken publicly before about the wicked targeting of the brilliant conservative Catholic who achieved the highest position in the church ever achieved by an Australian, Prefect of the Secretariat for the Economy in the Vatican, the third most senior role of God's Catholic Church on earth. And perhaps it's because Gerard knows that I have known His Eminence for many years now and could never give any credence to the allegations against him. The week before the Child Abuse Royal Commission was announced at the end of 2012, I was appointed by Premier O'Farrell to inquire into the police investigation of allegations against a number of then deceased Catholic priests in the Catholic Diocese of Maitland, Newcastle. It was prompted by claims of an activist former police officer, Peter Fox, who appears in Gerard's book as one of many Pell antagonists. In my commission's report, I found that his claims of a Catholic police mafia covering up allegations against priests were completely unfounded. And I also found that he had completely lost his objectivity when it came to talking about Catholics in any way at all. But I didn't know until I read it in Gerard's book that Fox had told some ABC program that I had acted as if I was running Guantanamo Bay. When I was appointed to inquire into the Newcastle Diocese, I was horrified at the number of people, many of them lawyers and many christened Catholics, who said to me, "Are you going to get Pell?" And I explained to each that the Cardinal had never had jurisdiction over anything in Newcastle, and he'd been a resident of Victoria during the whole lifetimes of the couple of rogue imposter priests that I was looking at. But he's the boss Catholic, they'd say. He's the head of the Catholic Church, they thought. And they thought they could blame him for every case, no matter where in Australia and no matter when. I am gratified that his eminence in his prison diary described my commission of inquiry as much more even-handed than the McClellan outfit. As Gerard explains, as Cardinal Pell became an ongoing target for most of the media, and he nominates the many who vilified His Eminence and the few who remained steadfast in their support, there was a widespread belief that he was somehow solely responsible for all child sexual abuse in the Australian Catholic Church at whatever time. But as Gerard explains, all archbishops and bishops are autonomous in their own archdiocese and report directly to the Pope in Rome. Also, the religious orders, of course, report directly to their provincials in Australia, and they report to the international heads, who then report to the Pope. So the structure of the Catholic Church was not well understood by most journalists covering the allegations against the Cardinal, and even those brought up in the Catholic faith seemed to get that wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, 2.5 years ago, I was invited to give the patronal feast day address of the St. Thomas More Society, which is a fellowship of lawyers inspired by the example of the saint, his life of law and public service, and of course his martyrdom at Tower Hill. At a time when His Eminence was imprisoned and his appeal to the Victorian Court of Appeal had been heard but not yet determined, I said this. And perhaps I drew it from one of Chris Merritt's excellent articles. Chris is here tonight. "We pride ourselves, don't we, on the sophistication of our legal system in comparison to those of other parts of the world, those of earlier times. For decades in this country, we mocked with a sense of superiority the Stalinist show trials of dissidents whose guilt had already been determined. In law schools and in public discourse, we took pride that our common law system, with its appeals, checks and balances, hard-won evidentiary rules developed for the protection of individual liberty and the golden thread of the presumption of innocence, would never be eroded. But the apotheosis of our legal system, our justice system, has passed." This was what I said 2.5 years ago. "Martyrdom is revived today. No one is physically slain by the state, but dry, bloodless martyrdom is now the ultimate sanction of the legal system, as it is blandished, propelled and rewarded by an agenda-driven press and a purulent, deeply anti-Christian social media. His Eminence Cardinal Pell is, as I said in the speech 2.5 years ago, as we are all so painfully aware, imprisoned now in his own Tower of London, while we fervently pray that the Court of Appeal will muster the courage to deliver justice. Even that result will only mean that those judges will become joint targets with the Cardinal of the baying mob. But could it be that the law is now the last place that a Catholic cardinal, ever true to the immutable tenets of his faith, accused of sexual assault of choir boys, can expect justice?" I quoted Paul Kelly, who's here tonight too, where he recognised the political strategy of the Child Abuse Royal Commission as the combination of a moral crusade, a cast of victims, and coming systemic dismantling of the Catholic Church. Ultimately, that commission, which was of course not a court at all, no matter how much it was trapped up to be and no matter how much the head of it demanded that everyone call him Your Honour, It was an investigatory body and it produced statistics that were selectively reported in the media, making it seem that most responsible for child abuse in the history of Australia were Catholic clergy, and that most victims were altar boys and choristers in Catholic churches and schools. This was not the case. Live-in welfare institutions were the location of the majority of sexual assaults on children studied. But from having prosecuted hundreds of child sexual assault cases, I can assure you that a child is in most danger of sexual assault in his or her home, and appreciably more so in Aboriginal communities. I interpolate from bits of an old speech that, as Gerard reminds us in his book, he appeared on the ABC Insiders program, brave chap that he is, just after the Royal Commission was announced, and said that he was concerned that it would be a distraction from the sexual abuse that is known to be happening in the present in a number of Indigenous communities. But, as I said in 2019, the Royal Commission did not go there. It published as a fact that 4,444 Catholic priests in Australia had engaged in the sexual abuse of children. But it wasn't a court. Not only was the criminal standard of proof not satisfied, no proof was required, just a complaint. And I said this, Cardinal Pell's conviction must go down as the most iniquitous miscarriage of justice in Australian jurisprudence. Apart from the conviction relying on one witness alone, the circumstances surrounding the alleged assaults are just too implausible for any reasonable person to accept. What is it about that complainant whose word alone was accepted over the evidence of the Cardinal, the other boy present, who had before he died told his mother that there was nothing untoward going on, and the Monsignor whose job it was to accompany the Cardinal? Why does that complainant have a monopoly on the truth? When I said that 2.5 years ago in an organisation of Christian lawyers, some left in audible disgust, and I felt the hostility that Gerard experienced so much more publicly as he defended the rule of law and the Cardinal throughout all of the travails of his eminence. As Gerard says in his chapter, Royal Commission or Roman Catholic Commission, the Royal Commission is best known for its focus on Cardinal Pell as well as Catholic institutions. Literally thousands of pages of submissions, transcripts and findings were devoted to Pell and the areas in which he worked. In spite of this, no evidentiary or documentary evidence was found to develop a case against the Cardinal. Gerard's book shows how the vituperation piled onto the Cardinal just reverberated through the Victorian police and into its prosecuting authorities and its courts. Gerard describes how the two judges of the Victorian Court of Appeal, who in the majority dismissed the Cardinal's appeal, held that the complainant's inconsistency and uncertainty in giving evidence increased rather than diminished his credibility. However, as Gerard writes, they also held that any uncertainty and imprecision on behalf of the opportunity witnesses weakened the defence's case, a contradiction, he writes, that was never explained. Gerard, in company with I hope, most lawyers and everyone else, commends the minority judgment of Justice Mark Weinberg, which was almost twice the length of the joint judgment of the minority in the Victorian case of George Pell against the Queen, as one of the most important judicial dissents in Australian legal history. And to any lawyer, it was so evidently and eloquently correct. It was a blueprint of the High Court's 7-0 judgment allowing the appeal. And Gerard excoriates another Pell antagonist, an academic, for the ignorance of this comment. Pell's acquittal on the narrow technical ground that he did not commit the crimes for which he was charged on the indictment was never going to provide closure or catharsis for the many Catholics and non-Catholics who sympathise with the scores of victims of other priests. Cardinal Pell, The Media Pylon and Collective Guilt is a characteristically meticulously researched history of how dozens and dozens of people from the media, law and police, every one of whom would proclaim themselves inclusivity and diversity loving, justified their appalling anti-Catholic, anti-conservative bigotry by, as he demonstrates, believing what they want to believe and taking comfort that the conviction demonstrated the hypocrisy of Cardinal Pell's Catholic theological conservatism. Ladies and gentlemen, I have known Cardinal Pell for 20 years now, having met him on the set of a Jeffrey Robertson's hypothetical show in Melbourne. The show was terrific fun, of course, and afterwards the cast of guests was entertained in the studios of HSV Melbourne. And as the quite convivial evening wore on after the show, only three of the guests were left enjoying some amusing yarns. His Eminence, who was still Archbishop of Melbourne, me, and one Mr. Roger Rogerson. And I had met him before when he was a witness for the Crown. At that stage, of course, he had some minor blemishes, but no capital crimes yet on his slate. In fact, I digress, when I'd called him as a witness in a criminal trial back in 1995, defence counsel was keen to ensure that the jury knew very well that he was disgraced former Detective Sergeant Rogerson. And so defence counsel said to him, "Mr. Rogerson, you're the Roger Rogerson who was accused of trying to kill one of your police colleagues, aren't you?" And he said, "Everyone I've tried to kill is in Rookwood." So the Cardinal, the rogue former policeman, and I enjoyed a terrific conversation, and quite a long one too, two of us on Victoria's finest ale and one taking a Scotch whisky. I spoke to His Grace, as he then was, about his achievement in having set up Australia's first process for investigating and compensating claims of clerical sex abuse. And he was horrified about the abuse, and he was gratified that he was in a position to lead the way in reform and in making practical amends with sensible limits. The extraordinary future for all of us was unknown, thanks be to God. I have shared some other wonderful times with His Eminence. In 2010, we and 18 other people were invited by then New South Wales Police Commissioner Andrew Scipione to be in his inaugural Community of Awareness Policing program, which Andrew Scipione had developed. And many hundreds of people have done that course since, but we were in the first lot, and we had tremendous fun participating in police training of all sorts and taking part in police boats at Marine Area Command and counter-terrorism and the police air wing. But my abiding memory of that course was being in the front passenger seat in a police car on the skid pan at the driver training lot at the Goulburn Police Academy, and Cardinal Pell was driving. It was scarier than teaching your naughtiest son how to drive. He went for it. His faith rendered him fearless. Well, that's how I saw it. He got top marks in the driving. He threw himself into the training. He really enjoyed the whole course, which went for 2 or 3 months, once a week or something. And all the participants really grew to love his humanity and his enthusiasm and his great sense of humour. And the commissioner was obviously already a fan, having handpicked the group. But Eminence didn't top the shooting class. That he was pipped by Dr. Jamal Rifi, who was representing our Muslim brethren. When he was appointed 3IC to the Vatican, I wrote to Eminence to congratulate him. And I remember thinking that such top international recognition, if it occurred in acting or in sport or business, would be so well recognised and applauded throughout our society. By the time of his gracious reply, I had become aware that ICAC had targeted my family for some ill-conceived but unrelenting attack. That was just the month after McClellan dragged me in and cross-examined me for 2 days as an alleged cover-upper of sexual abuse, because I had at one stage recommended that there be no further proceedings in a particular child sexual assault case because there was no chance of conviction. No prosecutor has been game to do that since. So now everyone's on trial for everything, and that's all part of the problem. But I digress, and there's plenty of work for someone like me now as a result. But anyway, when His Eminence returned my letter, I noted his elegant coat of arms on the top of his correspondence, bearing the words, "Be not afraid." And those words that so often appear in the Old and New Testaments, and it did remind me of the great hymn of my school days anyway. If you pass through raging waters in the sea, you shall not drown. If you walk amid the burning flames, you shall not be harmed. And if wicked tongues insult and hate you, all because of me, blessed, blessed are you. And I felt a divine message of hope and strength, and we know how His Eminence got through his disgraceful and horrible ordeal. Gerard records how the Victorian Police Commissioner of the time gave completely incorrect answers about the Pell investigation after the High Court judgment, never conceding that the investigation started with the solicitation of allegations. Victoria Police's Operation Tethering, set up in 2013, became publicly known 5 years later when, at Cardinal Pell's committal, the detective running it admitted that the Cardinal had been the target before any complaints had ever been received. They'd commenced operations in 2013 to see whether he had committed crimes that had gone unreported, but a complaint had only came forward in 2015. And Gerard refers to this in his book as a Get Pell campaign. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a tremendous supporter of juries. I gave a closing address to one today, and I'm confident of a just verdict of not guilty. It's one of those cases that really should have been stopped, but no one's now got the guts. Each one of us and every judge harbours his or her own prejudices about people of this sort or the other. And for judges, prejudices about a lawyer representing a particular party can and do exist. When one can't guard against one's own prejudices, even attempting to can mean unwarranted favour to the other side. But between 12 jurors, prejudice is leavened out, and a jury is the most independent arbiter of fact available, if its independence has not been compromised. Such was the vitriol poured over the Cardinal in a campaign of at least 6 years. There just weren't 12 people who could judge without prejudice. Gerard quotes Justice Mark Weinberg, a true hero of this chronicle, as saying, I've said previously in judgments that juries almost always get it right, but the word is almost. The media, both social and antisocial, encouraged the vile baying mob who ranted and writhed about the entrances to the Cardinal's courts. And the day after he was convicted, the sister of the allegedly abused boy said, "The public has sent the strongest of messages to these men of white privilege and power. You no longer rule the world." What's going on? So the Royal Commission's findings suggest that a proposition doesn't require the support of any evidence or reasoning. It's simply true, no proof required. And if members of the legal profession can say something like this, it's little wonder that lawyers can argue that allegations of sexual assault do not need any corroboration or evidentiary support. They are credible just by themselves. Many in the press accept this proposition, and it's likely that a proportion of those who end up on juries do too. So we really are in danger of losing not only the concept of a fair trial, but the basis of morality. Blame can be transferred to the imagined characteristics of the group to which the individual belongs. Unstated motivations to bring down an individual to whom one has formed a dislike, to bring down a prominent member of an institution against one which one may have formed a grudge, or to be celebrated and supported and probably financially compensated or rewarded is another motivation. We first knew of the detail of the allegations against Cardinal Pell from a book by Louise Milligan. Gerard traces the effects of this book and the accolades it continued to attract even after its premise had been utterly discredited. That book received a Walkley Award and a superscription from Thomas Keneally, which says, in effect, Pell got what he deserved because he was a notable neoconservative who had questioned climate change and has raised only muted opposition to the federal government's heinous asylum seeker policy. Ladies and gentlemen, Gerard's book is a meticulous chronology which draws together all the stakeholders, as they would call themselves, in the attempted destruction of Cardinal George Pell. As Gerard illustrates so eloquently, they believed what they wanted to believe. They were desperate to justify their hatred. They thought they had. Then, when the High Court resoundingly declared them wrong, they had to trash the legal system, including the presumption of innocence, and then the hatred can continue. Gerard, the lawyer, explains the applicable law with clarity. His compendious lesson on tendency and coincidence evidence decodes the concept so elegantly. His dry wit is palpable. As he says of the barrister representing the Crown in the Victorian Court of Appeal, his position was that A was a witness of truth, it's just that the Crown found it difficult to explain precisely what the truth was. The foreword to Gerard's book is by the Honourable John Howard, who said, "I never believed the charges ultimately brought against the Cardinal. That was based on my assessment of him as a man and the implausibility of the alleged offences having taken place within the circumstances which were alleged." Gavin records the commendation he drew from former Victorian Chief Crown Prosecutor Gavin Silbert for Keith Windschuttle's excellent The Persecution of George Pell. When Gerard wrote to Mr. Silbert about something he had written, Silbert replied, "We lawyers are used to defending clients and interpret their acquittals as a failure of the prosecution to prove guilt beyond reasonable doubt. I must say that after reading Keith's book, I was persuaded not only was the standard of proof not met, but that Pell was an innocent man." Gerard Henderson's Cardinal Pell, The Media Pile-On and Collective Guilt will also reinforce readers of His Eminence's innocence. And in addition, it powerfully makes the case against those who whipped up the vituperation against him and those who shamelessly piled on. Thank you, Gerard, for your sense of justice and your fortitude in writing this important book, which it is my honour to launch.
Thank you very much, Margaret, for a terrific launch of Gerard's book. It's my duty now to introduce the author so that he can respond to Margaret's kind words and tell us a bit more about the book. Gerard, as you know, is the executive director of the Sydney Institute, which he founded with his wife, Anne Henderson, in 1987. Gerard's a graduate of the University of Melbourne and of La Trobe University and taught and researched politics at the University of Tasmania and at La Trobe University before being appointed Private Secretary to the Honourable Kevin Newman, a minister in the Fraser government, in 1976. He subsequently worked in the Commonwealth Department of Employment and Industrial Relations for 3 years before becoming, in 1984, Senior Private Secretary to the Honourable John Howard, who has, of course, written the foreword to this book. Gerard has been a newspaper columnist and a media commentator for many years and is currently a columnist for The Weekend Australian and the author of the Sydney Institute's weekly media watchdog blog. With Anne, he has established the Sydney Institute as one of the most important forums in the country for debate and discussion across the divides of politics and ideas. And in recognition of the contribution they've both made, as the Vice-Chancellor mentioned at the beginning, they've both made to Australian history, public affairs and civil discourse, they were awarded honorary doctorates by Australian Catholic University in 2020. Gerard is the author of a number of books, including Menzies' Child, The Liberal Party of Australia, and Santa Maria, A Most Unusual Man. And his latest book, of course, is Cardinal Pell, The Media Pile-On and Collective Guilt. Please welcome Gerard Henderson.
Um, Many thanks for coming along tonight to the Australian Catholic University for the launch of Cardinal Pell, the Media Pylon and Collective Guilt. I'm very grateful to the Vice-Chancellor, who had to leave because he has another appointment at 6, for hosting this event, and to the ACU staff led by Damien Freeman, who helped to organise it, along with Michael Casey and, of course, our Sydney Institute's staff, Anne Henderson, Lolita Mathias, Paige Helly, who did the wonderful cover of the book, and Naomi Killen. Anthony Capello and the team at Connacourt in Brisbane did a great job in getting the book out before the Christmas break, especially in view of the distribution problems currently caused by the pandemic. John Howard, who wrote a fine foreword for this book, has a commitment at the Australian National Archives in Canberra at the moment, today and tomorrow, and could not be here. He told me that he was hugely disappointed and not been able to attend, and added, "I'm a great fan of Margaret Keane." So there you go. And it's also great to have Barry Humphreys in the audience, and it's usually the other way around. We're all in the audience and Barry's up there, so it's great to have him here. Now, it's great that Australia's second longest-serving Prime Minister after Robert Menzies took time to read the entire manuscript and write such a considered and courageous foreword. As you know, Mr. Howard is not a Catholic. His comments on the Pell case, before and after the unanimous decision of the High Court of Australia, demonstrate his commitment to justice, however unfashionable a cause might be, and it was, and remains unfashionable to defend Cardinal Pell in some circles. Like John Howard, I'm an admirer of Margaret Keane, SC, who has experienced a grievous denial of natural justice with respect to her treatment by the New South Wales Independent Commission Against Corruption, ICAC. Like Cardinal Pell, Ms. Keane had to go to the High Court to have her name cleared, but she has not received an apology from ICAC for its reputational damage inflicted on her, and likewise Cardinal Pell has not received an apology from Victoria Police for the and various legal institutions in the state of Victoria for his wrongful conviction and jailing. In a perceptive review of my book in the media column in The Australian on the 29th of November, Chris Mitchell, a former editor-in-chief of The Australian, said that the book was essentially about justice, and I understand this is also the book of Terence Tobin QC, who was thanked in the acknowledgement. It was the position of Father Frank Brennan, who disagrees with Cardinal Pell on aspects of theology, but was one of his most strongest defenders, and Frank Brennan's work was most helpful in writing this book. Professor Greg Craven, a former Vice-Chancellor of the ACU, held a similar position, as did Katrina Lee, who accompanied Cardinal Pell during his hearings before the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse and his various legal appearances. She also helped by providing material for this book. Others who publicly doubted Pell's conviction included Monica DeMitt, James Franklin, Anne Henderson, Paul Kelly, Warren Mundine, Lyle Shelton and Keith Windschuttle, who are here today, and others who are not. I also should mention my friend, the late Paul Stenhouse, and along with Andrew Bolt, Jeff Kennett, and Amanda Vanstone, among others. And a slightly larger list is in the book. I was born, educated, and worked for some years in Melbourne, so it comes with no pleasure to reflect on the injustices that the Victorian-born Pell suffered in the Victorian legal system before the matter got out of Victoria and into the High Court of Australia. A few Victorians did express concern that Pell could not have been charged, prosecuted and found guilty beyond reasonable doubt on charges that lack substantive evidence beyond the contradictory allegations of one complainant, and in spite of 20 witnesses whose evidence was consistent with the Cardinal's innocence. Most notably, Justice Mark Weinberg, in his devastating 200-page minority judgment in the Victorian Court of Appeal, perhaps the most important dissenting judgment in the history of Australian criminal law. But overwhelmingly, the Victorian legal and media institutions were against the Cardinal, and a few examples illustrate the point. Victoria Police set up, as Margaret Keane said, what was termed Operation Tethering to investigate Archbishop Pell before a single complaint had been laid and later advertised for people to come forward. Graham Ashton, the Victorian Police Commissioner, denied on 3AW after the High Court decision that such an organisation had gone into operation before a complaint had been made. This statement was false. Originally, the Office of Public Prosecutions declined to take the case against Pell, so he was charged by Victoria Police. But the OPP appeared for the prosecution in the Magistrates' Court. During the committal proceeding, Magistrate Belinda Wellington declared, in accordance with Victorian criminal law, all criminal matters precede the trial unless the credibility of a witness is effectively destroyed or when the evidence is so weak that the prospect of conviction is minimal. Magistrate Wellington threw out, and properly so, Victoria Police's charge, among a couple of others, that Pell had raped a boy who cried out during a film in a crowded theatre in Ballarat. This says a lot about Victoria Police. This charge should never have been laid. But the magistrate allowed one charge to go to trial, despite the fact that Victoria Police admitted in the Magistrates' Court that the allegation had not been investigated. This was the fifth of five allegations, this was the fifth of five convictions which the High Court quashed. But this was an allegation that went to a conviction and to the High Court, and the police had never investigated it. On several occasions, the Victorian Director of Public Prosecution rejected applications by the defence that the charges should not be proceeded with, including after the jury in the first trial could not come to a decision. Yet the prosecutor at the trial and the retrial could not explain, for example, among many examples, where the adult altar servers, who are always close to an archbishop during a solemn mass, were at the time of the alleged offences. They were simply disappeared. So was the master of ceremonies, Monsignor Charles Portelli, who was physically close to the archbishop throughout the solemn mass. They were disappeared. It is widely acknowledged, even by such Pell antagonists as The Guardian's David Marr, that the Crown performed woefully before the Victorian Court of Appeal. And it is a matter of record that Kerry Judd QC, the Victorian Director of Public Prosecutions, could not explain before the High Court how the alleged crimes could have happened. Another dismal failure. Melbourne-based ABC journalist Louise Milligan led the media pile on against Pell with the ABC 7:30 report on the 27th of July 2016, which occupied the entire 30-minute program. Milligan first focused on allegations against Pell concerning offences alleged to have occurred in public in the Eureka Pool at Ballarat in the 1970s. In time, these charges were dropped by the DPP and did not proceed to trial, but they got 20 minutes out of 30 minutes on the ABC. The ABC focused also briefly, in Milligan's report, on the alleged crimes, also in a public place, at St Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne in the mid-1990s. And of course, these convictions were quashed by the High Court. So 30 minutes of scandal and rumour ended up coming to nothing. As documented in this book, Louise Milligan refused to answer questions about the journalism in the Cardinal, the rise and fall of George Pell. I've published the letter I wrote to her shortly after, where I questioned her book. Within 5 minutes, she not only refused to answer it, she threw it to a publisher, Louise Milligan, who I know quite well, and Louise sent me an email telling me to back off. Now, if any journalist had queried anything that I'd written in a book published by Louise Adler, as my book on Santa Maria was, I would have answered it. I wouldn't have fled to my publisher unless I didn't have a case to stand on. And Louise Milligan never engaged with the defender of George Pell and or a critic of his book. All her comments really were in soft one-to-one interviews with her ABC fellow journalist or in panels with one or more mates at literary festivals, where the entire audience was against Cardinal Pell, as occurred, I was told, by someone who was there at the Canberra Literary Festival. It was just a complete and utter pile-on. Martin Foley, a minister in the Daniel Andrews Victorian Labor government, launched Louise Milligan's book on the 17th of May 2017. At this time, it was widely known that Victoria Police was investigating Pell, since this information had been leaked by a person or persons unknown to the journalist Lucy Morris Maher, another Pell antagonist, in February 2016. In view of this, Mr. Foley's association with Louise Milligan and her book Cardinal in May 2017, knowing that he was under investigation since February 2016, was, in my view, improper and unprofessional. Immediately after the decision of the High Court in Pell versus the Queen was delivered, the Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews put out this statement. I make no comment about today's High Court decision, but I have a message for everyone, for every single victim and survivor of child sexual abuse. I see you, I hear you, I believe you. This was another improper and unprofessional intervention by a senior Victorian politician in the criminal law jurisdiction. Until a criminal case is concluded, a complainant is just that, a complainant. Once a conviction is finalised, he or she becomes a victim. This is fundamental to the criminal law. If Premier Andrews believes that every complainant is a victim, as he said, then the state of Victoria may as well abolish all trials and proceed direct to sentencing once charges have been laid by Victoria Police or by the Office of Public Prosecutions. I am not aware of any Australian political leader who has deliberately, consciously, and in front of the media cast doubt in public on a unanimous judgment in a high-profile criminal law case, not one. The Pell case revealed deep problems within the Victorian system of justice involving Victoria Police, the Office of Public Prosecutions, the Director of Public Prosecutions, the Magistrates Court, the Victorian Court of Appeal, including the majority judgments of the Chief Justice of Victoria and the President of the Victorian Court of Appeal, and the Victorian Government itself. Yet close to 2 years since the High Court's historic decision, none of these matters have been addressed. It is as if the governance of Victoria is in denial about its comprehensive failure over the Pell prosecution. Margaret Kinnean is an innocent victim of ICAC, which has powers similar to a Royal Commission. And Cardinal Pell has suffered serious reputational damage following the findings of the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse headed by Peter McClellan, which were released shortly after the High Court decision. This book demonstrates that the Royal Commission's findings concerning Pell's alleged knowledge of offending by the notorious paedophile priest Gerald Risdale when Pell was a relatively young priest in the Ballarat Dais are contradictory, and I point them out, contradictory findings. Moreover, the findings were made in spite of a lack of evidence on the assumption that it was untenable, and similar words were used, untenable, that Pell would not have known about Risdale. This is a kind of reverse onus of proof, which the High Court dismissed in the Pell case. Now, of course, as Mark McKinnon has pointed out, ICAC is not a court of law, although I think at times it thinks it is. But whether it's a court of law or a court of inquiry or an institution of inquiry, it's not entitled to reverse the onus of proof. Moreover, despite spending some 19 hours in the Royal Commission's witness box about his time in Ballarat and Melbourne, the Royal Commission made one finding against Pell without putting its case to him for his response. So he was found against and they never asked him about it. Another lack of due process. And then there is the media, and I've mentioned some of them before, led by Pell antagonists, Louise Milligan at the ABC, David Marr at The Guardian. I've got a section about my relationship with David in the book, which I must say was great fun writing, but he hasn't commented, because it appeared in Quadrant about 2 weeks ago and he hasn't commented. Lucy Morris-Marr at the New Daily and Melissa Davey at The Guardian. Now, essentially all four, and many others following them, they accepted all allegations against Pell without proper checking and believed what they wanted to believe. They were cheered on by their colleagues and some won media awards for books that are deeply flawed. The ABC was the main offender. Such was the hostility to Pell within the taxpayer-funded public broadcaster that not one ABC journalist expressed the view that Pell was not guilty beyond reasonable doubt. I'm not saying that they didn't express the view that he was innocent, that he was not guilty beyond reasonable doubt. Now, we know that Noel Debien at the ABC held this view, that Pell was not guilty beyond reasonable doubt, and we also know, and the quote's in the book, that he felt so intimidated by the anti-Pell culture at the ABC that he could not say this, even off-air and in private. Another message of the Pell case, which is highly relevant today. turns on the question of whether a fair trial is possible at a time of a media pile-on such as the one Pell experienced, especially when there is a view that somehow that someone is somehow responsible for the crimes of others, that is, that someone is collectively guilty for the crimes of others, as was the case, I believe, and Margaret Kinane cited some examples there in the Pell case. Now, this is a book about Cardinal Pell, but it's also about justice in the age of social media, which has facilitated what Chief Judge Peter Kidd in the Victorian County Court, when sentencing Pell, condemned as the lynch mob mentality. So you have a very senior judge in Victoria defending, criticising the lynch mob mentality of what took place in the media and outside the court, and no one in Victoria did anything about it. It continued. The trial and injustice of Cardinal Pell, the trial and conviction of Cardinal Pell was an injustice not only to the convicted man himself, but also to the real victims of paedophilia. The Pell case is but a number of cases involving Victoria Police, the Victorian legal system and the Victorian political system as it relates to the law that warrant an independent inquiry, preferably undertaken by someone outside the state of Victoria, but don't expect any action soon. And once again, thanks to those who are here today and thanks to those who supported me in writing the book, many of whom are named in the acknowledgements. Thank you.
It falls to me now to say a few words of thanks to our speakers before we conclude proceedings. I don't need to tell you how much we need people with courage in public life, in politics, in the law, in the media, public commentary, and in our institutions. And I don't need to tell you what can happen when it's missing in these places. I'd like to think that generally in Australia, when it comes to public-spirited or civic courage, we don't do too badly, but we need to remember that courage is a muscle. Like all muscles, if it's not used, it just becomes flab. So we've been very fortunate this evening to hear from two outstanding exemplars of civic courage in Margaret Kinane and Gerard Henderson. Speaking about a case which has really tested civic courage in our country. Margaret, on behalf of all of us here tonight, thank you for your remarks. Thank you for launching this book. And thank you, Gerard, for writing the book and for speaking about it tonight. If I could add personally too, as someone who's known the Cardinal for over 14 years and worked with him for 17 very closely, I want to acknowledge the debt of gratitude I feel I owe to Gerard for what he's done. It was not a large number of writers and commentators, some of whom are also here tonight, who insisted on scrutinising the case against an innocent man who'd been made a hate figure in circumstances where it wasn't easy to do. Gerard was one of them, and we are deeply in your debt. Please join me in thanking our speakers. I must also thank those who've organised the event for us tonight, in particular Alicia Moore, National Events Manager at ACU and her team, and my colleague Damien Freeman at the Institute, who have done a terrific job and an enormous amount of work in making sure everything has run smoothly. And thanks finally to each of you for coming and for being here with us for the launch of this important book. Please stay now, have a drink, have something to eat. There's copies of the book on sale. Christmas is coming, buy a couple of extra copies for presents. The author's very happy to sign them. Thank you all very much.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.